Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
Pam Boyd's ward on the city's northwest side escaped the May 16th tornado without the level of destruction seen elsewhere in the city. Some of her residents suffered tree, roof, and gutter damage, but their homes were still livable. Boyd saw the serious damage as she helped out her colleagues, and she says she would give the city a 10 for its response to the storm. The alderwoman of the 13th Ward joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We've seen a county government that has had smooth and steady leadership, and I think we're on a good path right now.
I realize the office needed a prosecutor to run it.
And we have a better solution of addressing those needs.
I don't think it's about a popularity contest. What I think it about is it's time for change.
Working together across city and county, across political affiliations, that we can start to find overlapping goals.
I had some moments where I had to, you know, lean into my courage.
You'll see us work together on areas of agreement, and you'll see us have difficult conversations when we don't agree.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me today in the studio is
Pamela Boyd.
She is the alderwoman of the 13th Ward. And alderwoman, for people who aren't as steeped in this as we are, remind listeners roughly of the boundaries of the 13th Ward.
We start at 270 and North Riverfront, and we go all the way to Page at Union, and then we touch up to all the North County municipalities. So we do Wellston, Pineline, Jennings, Bell Fountain. We touch all those municipalities.
You were last on the podcast in 2017 when you had been elected to what was in the 27th Ward. And at the time you mentioned that you had been getting up to at 2 a.m. to go to your job at a long-term care facility as a dietary manager. Are you still doing that?
No. From when they blessed me with the ward that I have, I cannot work the job and do this also. The 27th Ward was a small, compact ward. And when they came up with reducing the wards, that was the promise. And they did not fulfill that promise. And so when I was blessed with the 13th Ward, then the 13th Ward, I went from 10,000 registered voters to 21,000 registered voters. And so I'm not even counting the people that aren't registered that's in the ward. So the ward, my ward literally tripled. I picked up two other wards in addition to the 27th Ward.
And when you say it didn't fulfill the promise, what do you mean by that? Are you talking about redistricting didn't fulfill the promise or ward reduction?
The ward reduction, because the promise was made that first they sold the people a bill of goods and said, if we go with smaller number of older people, we would spend less money. That wasn't a reality. And then they said that it'll be compacted wards. Well, in North, they aren't compacted. These wards are larger and they have more area to cover. So, of course, they set us up for failure in the beginning of it. I tried to drive the ward. It took me, Rachel, it took me over an hour and a half just to drive from one end to the other. So it's kind of cumbersome to try to service all those people. And so they felt, well, we'll give you a legislative assistant. Well, it's okay when you have a compact ward. If it gave me like the size of a 27, we could have worked it with no problem. But when you have the size of the 13th Ward, him and I are kind of working as firefighters all through the ward. We built teams with the neighborhood improvement specialists, with the building inspectors, to try to meet regularly to find out, you know, what are our challenges, what are our biggest challenges that we have. So it's a lot to try to encompass, but I feel like I'm not succeeding in the role that I'm playing because I can't service people like I want to.
And what do you feel that you have lost in trying to bring the level of service that you would to your constituents in the 27th to more constituents in the 13th?
the highlight of my day, and people would laugh at me, my stress relief was riding the ward, getting out, talking to people, you know, sitting in people's living rooms, having breakfast or snacks with them, to kind of hear where their feelings are and where they are. I can't do that now. So I think that hurts me more than anything because I'm more of a personable person. I'd rather sit down with you and talk to you. I don't want to text. I don't want to email. I really want to have a conversation. And so my seniors are the biggest piece because I'm trying to make sure with all this going on that they aren't neglected and they aren't left out. So that's what my challenge is.
And this sounds like there's just not enough time to be as personable as you would want to
be. Yes, because I still get up. I don't get up at 2, but I get up at 4.
So, sleeping in.
Right. So I get up at 4, and I start by, you know, looking at emails and, you know, checking my phone, and then I'll check my office number to see what's on there. And sometimes I don't always hit the mark, and I don't like failing my community because I think I'm a servant, and that's what I'm here for. I'm here to serve my community, and I just think it was set up for me not to be able to serve them as I feel I need to.
And what are the main needs of the constituents in your 13th ward?
We're not getting city services at the level we should be getting it. We find areas that have been neglected, not since I've been in office, before I was in office. And so we're kind of backtracking, trying to clean up. You know, it's just like streets caving in, alleys caving in, trash not picked up, or the alleys are so bad the refuse can't get through the alley to pick up the trash, or lots that haven't been cut for years. And so to me, that plays a big role in making people feel like there's some hope. But when you don't get those basic services done, that's when you start feeling hopeless.
Do you feel that the city has improved at all in your time in office at getting those basic services?
They're trying, but when you don't have the manpower, that's what's tying your hands. And so what I explained to the administration we have now, you know, I understand we had a tornado. I get that. But we have to chew gum and walk at the same time. And so the services have to keep coming, if not more so now than ever. So I think that they're doing the best they can do with the manpower they have, but it's a struggle. You know, it's any business. If you don't have the help, you can't do the quality of service. And so they're trying to do it, but it's just a challenge for them.
And so what, in your mind, you've been in around city politics, not necessarily as an alderwoman, but involved in your ward for several decades now. What does the city need to do? What is the solution to the manpower problem?
Well, we have to change how we think, and I keep saying that, and I feel like a broken record, Rachel, because I keep saying this. This city was built in the 1900s, and the way they did business then is not the way we need to do business now. We need to go in the 21st century, and so we need to really look at each department to actually see, do we need all these positions filled? Where are we at? You know, how can we help become more streamlined to help residents? Like right now, forestry, my fight is we don't need seasonal workers like we did because we're in global warming. The weather might stay warmer to January. So use that opportunity to cut everything that you missed. But I think we don't need seasonal workers. We need permanent workers. And then we have to make sure that we offering them a good job because people used to run to work for the city. So what happened? And the biggest thing I hear, it's not even the benefits, it's the pay. And so we have to get in the competitive market to make sure that we can be on the level where the other people are.
We are coming up on 5 months since the devastating tornado, and I know that there were neighborhoods in your ward that were impacted. How did you and your loved ones fare?
Well, I was fine. My home was fine. But we were out helping in the 11th ward and the 12th ward. We had people that from our ward that were going into those wards trying to help those people. And then I found out I have people in my ward that have been impacted, had never said anything. I had just started riding around in the Wells Goodfellow and Hamilton Heights community and start seeing what was going on. I just start going to people's doors and saying, were you impacted by the tornado? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, well, why didn't you call? And so they were like, we just figured, you know, we didn't know what to do. And so that's how I start finding out.
I'm guessing this was not the severe structural damage that happened elsewhere. The homes were still livable, but maybe it was a... And was this just people figured it wasn't worth the effort to try and file the paperwork for it?
It was, because I had a resident in the Bate neighborhood. And I said, well, why didn't you... Because he was saying his shingles had got knocked off and part of his guttering. And I said, well, why didn't you turn in? He said, I didn't even think it was a priority. And I was like, no, they use that information to track the damage that was done by the tornado. So like I said, I think a lot of it, Rachel, is people don't understand. You know, I told them, I'd rather for you to turn it in and they say that it's not okay, you know, it's not going to be able to help, than not to turn in. You never know.
Where do you think the breakdown was in getting that information out to the people in your ward?
People were seeing the devastation in other areas, and they were like, it's not a priority for us. You know, take care of those people. And that's how St. Louis residents are. They'll help other people and neglect themselves.
How would you rate the city's response to the tornado?
I rate them a 10. Because you know what? And like I tell people, it was a disaster. Who can plan for a disaster? You know, it was just like COVID. We weren't prepared for COVID. And so we learned as we went along. And so it's a hard lesson to learn. But, you know, I think the mayor jumped in and she was like an octopus. She was everywhere trying to accommodate whoever she could accommodate. But it was a disaster. And so I think the community came out and the city as a whole came out. So I think it was good. And so now we can go to the drawing board and look and see what the missteps were and start putting together an actual plan to prepare us for whenever another disaster hits.
About sort of planning for the future in the wards that were impacted and devastated, as some of them were, what do you think the city needs to consider as it looks at rebuilding those areas to protect the residents that are there?
We as a city have a lot of vacant buildings.
Yeah.
Our vacant buildings are sturdy buildings with brick. And so we had a lot of Prop NS properties.
And there's a tax that helps to stabilize the buildings so they can be redeveloped.
Right. And so those buildings, they put new roofs on them, gutterings, window. And in my ward, I've seen the results of those Prop NS. And so I feel we can, if Rachel had a home and she was totally devastated and doesn't have a place to go, we can work with them to start. Look at a forgivable loan. Just as long as they stay in the house for 10 years, we can work with them to help them, work with organizations to help them get furnished, to furnish the property, get the house stabilized. That's going to sustain people in our city. And that's my main goal. As a city, we have to hold on to the population because we're losing it. And I think this tornado impacted us even more.
And thinking kind of longer term, how do you prevent or protect? What does the city need to do to stop outsiders, big developers from coming in and just kind of scooping up all the property to advance their own needs and wants in that area?
And that's my biggest fear, because I don't want the Pam Boys or the Rachels or any of those people that didn't have insurance, was caught up in the family home, that their name wasn't on the home, I don't want those people being hoodwinked, because that's what I call them. These people are like vultures, and our city is prime property, and they're waiting for the opportunity, and they feel this is their opportunity. So they figure they can give off of people a couple of dollars for their property, and that we know it's more worth more than that. But they're just trying to, like you said, swoop everything up and take control. And so I think that's where our role comes in, to helping people, to sustain people, and to educate them. That's where we use the law associations and to help people. If it means a block at a time, go to each one of those people. And I know I keep saying that, and people keep saying, she keeps saying a block at a time. How else are we going to do it? You can't do a mass, you know, media thing. You have to go person to person. Our city is personable. So you have to go person to person to see where they are and how to help each person. And it's going to take time. And I tell people, we had a tornado. It won't be a quick turnaround to improve it. I'm not going to lie to people and say, oh, we can rebuild your house. No, we can't. Because back 100 years ago, from what it cost to build that house to now, it's no way. And it's not the city's responsibility. But I do feel it's our responsibility to sustain the people and help them get in stable homes. I think that's our responsibility.
And so you've talked about how you, as Alderwoman Boyd, would approach education and helping people understand what their rights are and how to protect their property. Is there anything that Alderwoman Pam Boyd, as a legislator, and your fellow Alder people could do to protect these individuals?
I think we could, because we can put a hold on people being able to grab up property like that. And I know working with Peter Hoffman, he plays a big role in helping us navigate.
He's at Legal Services, I believe,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and so he plays a big role in regards to that. And so I think we can do that part. We can look at ways to help, but we have to help people pull themselves up, not just give them out, because that's not going to help them.
I'm wondering what the tornado and the aftermath taught you about the city, about its residents and its politicians.
I think it taught me, out of all the fighting and bickering and attacking, we came together. And that's St. Louis. We come together. It doesn't make a difference, you know, race, culture, you know, whatever, nationality, you know, sex. We came together. And so I think that showed a powerful play for St. Louis.
And we'll be right back after this quick break.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with 13th Ward Alderwoman Pam Boyd. And Alderwoman, this is your fourth term now in the Board of Aldermen. What are your legislative priorities for this term?
Well, my legislative priorities now are, we're looking at the nuisance ordinance, because as the what we know, nuisances should be in two categories. One should be residential and one should be commercial, because the businesses are a nuisance, and it's not just gas stations. Then the other thing that I'm focusing on is the dumping. And so our city is infested.
Getting back to the nuisance, is this just that residential nuisance properties and business nuisance properties, there needs to be different penalties for it, different definitions of nuisances? What are you trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, so it's different definitions. Residential is when you have a lot of traffic coming in, or you have loud noise or whatever. But commercial is when they have the shootings and when they have the drug activity. And so it keeps adding up, you know, not running a business without a license, selling liquor to minors, selling paraphernalia.
And so is it basically just that the ordinances are written more for residential and don't take into account the different level of nuisance that is a commercial property?
It is. I remember Project 87. And I said, well, what happened? Because we had Project 87. They said, well, when the gas stations came, we just tacked them on. And I was like, you can't do that. That's two different things. And so now they realize it. So now they want to work with us to try to see how we could correct that. But what people have to realize is laws on that nuisance ordinance that are obsolete don't even exist anymore.
Yeah, nuisances that are from the 1920s.
Right,
that,
yeah.
And for those of us who may not have been around city politics for as long as you have, Project 87 was?
Project 87 was when they were targeting nuisance properties at residents. It was in the residential areas. And so it would be the building division, it would be the police department, it would be the health department, and it was one more piece, but they would all work together to address that property. And so the way it is now is not like that. And so if I'm calling, because when I go to the crackdown meetings, you'll have the nuisance officer, but you don't have anybody else there speaking. So that's not legitifying the case that you have against this property. So it's a longer process now, where with the Project 87, it wasn't.
So they could address all of the public safety, building code, mm-hmm. all of those things at once, whereas now it's, oh, we're going to look at this one specific little, yeah. there's too much noise or there's too much
right.
this, and it's not the complete picture.
And it wasn't, it's piecemealing. So it takes longer to either correct the problem or shut the problem down. And so that's why I said we need to look at the nuisance ordinance.
What do you think is the most consequential piece of legislation that you have been able to get through in your 8 years at the board? The one that you think is going to make the biggest difference for the residents of your ward and the rest of the city?
I think the one that I really fought on was the Rams. It was the one that we worked on, that Rams bill, and we worked hard on that Rams bill. And I think it would have made a bigger impact in our community. But when I started, I told them, I said, I don't want it for this session. I want it for next session, because I didn't know how the politics was going to move or whatever. And I had a wise elected official that had been down there for over 20 years. And I said, you know, all these elected officials, they come up with all these legislations, and I want to do that. They said, no, you don't. They said, you want to take your time. Make sure your legislation is going to have an impact on you and your community. So that's what I do. I try to make sure I think it through. But I talk to my community, too, about it and tell them this is what I'm thinking about and what do we need to do. Because a lot of times they'll say, well, you need to do a law on this. I said, it's already on the books. So they don't know. And that's what, you know, I try to communicate with them for them to be educated.
And on that Rams omnibus bill that was ultimately the result of negotiations between you, Alderwoman Sonier, the mayor's office, the board president's office, I want to get your perspective on those negotiations and the ultimate failure of it to pass.
The ultimate negotiations, Alderwoman Sonier and myself had worked diligently, and Greater St. Louis was a part of that. The mayor's office was a part of that. Casey Milbird, all of us worked hard on that bill, and we felt we had a good bill and ready to go. And then when the previous mayor, they started doing press conferences, and we were like, why are we doing press conferences? We haven't finalized the bill. And then when we had the hearing and the president came up with 5 amendments, and I told Alderwoman Sonier then, I said, it's dead. I said, because that wasn't the deal. And she said, I know. Because I'm telling you, Rachel, we had a deal. Yeah. We had it. It was a win-win on both sides. We were going to make something happen. The only thing I was nervous about was the water piece, because our infrastructure was so bad, and I felt, you know, I kept saying, we need to do a bond. We don't need to put a Band-Aid on it. We need to do a bond so we can fix our infrastructure. But that's what happened. You know, we had the deal, it was worked out, and at the hearing, it was killed.
What did that teach you about the board, its operation? How did it make you kind of view things down there?
It made me look at things differently because it wasn't the politics I remember. You know?
What do you mean?
So when I, ironically, as you know, I did not do this to get into politics.
Yeah.
I was just building block units. And so my friend, Greg Carter, when he worked with me and helped me, he kind of helped me with the politics to understand it.
Because it is a complicated hornet's nest sometimes for reasons that don't make a lot of sense to outsiders sometimes, but they matter.
And that's what I'm trying to teach my residents. I said, you only see the buffet. You don't see the work it takes to get to the buffet. And so I said, it's a lot of conversation. And Greg always taught me, it's a lot of conversation. It's deal breaking. You know, you deal working together deals. Okay, I give you on this end if you give me on that end. But what I'm seeing now, it's not like that. It's just like, this is what we want, and this is what you got to do. And I'm like, that's not politics. I said, politics is about negotiations. And sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't. But you try to negotiate, and I always think the best for the residents, how they're going to benefit from it. Because when I'm dead and gone, they still dealing with this. So that's how it was kind of disappointing to me, because it wasn't the politics I remember. And people tease me and they say, you are so naive because you just want people to work together. And I do. But that's just not where they are.
So this was, you feel like deals should be respected in politics. And when it came to the Rams money, it wasn't. It was
right.
My way or the highway here.
And that's what it was. And that just, I felt like somebody had dropped a bomb on me. I was like, oh, my God. You know, we worked so hard. And I think that's what I looked at, how hard we worked. And Sonia and I were really trying to show a unified effort. And then it just got killed. So I just think people have to understand it's not about us individually. It's about a city.
How has the tornado and its aftermath changed how you think that money should be spent? Or has it changed how you think that Ram settlement should be spent?
I still feel that we need to let it get the interest. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of interest. And when the mayor called and said, Pam, we want to use the Rams money, but we want to use the interest.
And you're not talking about Mayor Spencer for the tornado.
Right. So when Mayor Spencer told me that, I told her, yeah. I said, use the interest, because we still building interest. And all I think about, you know, when Alderwoman Taya said, do you mind holding a bill? And I said, no, I asked for that in the first place. Just think if I hadn't held the bill, we wouldn't have had nothing to fall back on. So that's how I look at it. If we would just take our time. But Rachel, it's money on the table, ARPA dollars that have not been spent.
And running out of time.
Yes. So we have to get that money out the door and taken care of. So I just think that the Rams money, the interest, tapping into the interest, we okay. But the principal, leave it there to let it keep building, because it could be another disaster come up, and where are we going to be?
With the current makeup at the board and the current alliances that exist, do you feel that the needs of your ward and perhaps other wards in North St. Louis are being addressed and heard?
I think they are. Again, I keep telling them this, and I don't think it's intentional as much as it's been for years, but I'm steadily telling them we're the afterthought, you know. And so we have prime property in our communities. We have homes. I remember when Sarah Ward Morton was an older person, she said when she would come from Jefferson City, she would drive through my neighborhood in North Point.
Like coming up and around on 70 to go south.
She said it is just so beautiful over there. And so we're fighting to sustain those neighborhoods. So we have good neighborhoods in our communities. And so I tell people all the time, I could have 8 developers in my ward. They would never see each other. That's how much land we have over there. But I just think, you know, the city, we just an afterthought. You know, it's just things that they're doing. And I was like, but you didn't think about us. And so I just want us to be, and I understand South gets recognized. You know why South gets recognized? Because they're the squeaky wheel.
I won't call you the squeaky wheel because that has the connotation of just being annoying and wanting to make it quiet.
Right.
But I mean, you and Alderwoman Keyes and Alderwoman Tyus, you advocate for your wards. You are squeaky wheel, quote unquote, about it. And yet it seems like the attention isn't there despite promises and best intentions.
Yeah. And so I really am vocal about that.
As policies get pushed through the Board of Aldermen, where they are presented as it's going to benefit the city, it is, you know, these are progressive things, and you're rolling your eyes a little bit here. What do you think is sort of the fundamental misunderstanding about the needs of your ward and other North City wards that just aren't getting addressed in legislation that is it comes out of the board sometimes?
Well, what I see is apples and oranges. And I tell people all the time, as old people say, what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. It might be something that's good in South. It won't help North. It'll be detrimental to North. And it's just like when they talk about putting the tiny homes up. Well, that's not going to benefit North. You have to look at where the homes will be, how it will be set up, who will run the home. So it's a whole process to me. And so I just think that we don't need to cookie cut the city. And I tell people that all the time. What might happen in what's good in Hamilton Heights might not be good in Booter neighborhood. It might not work. And so that's what you have to look at each individual neighborhood and listen to those older people that work those neighborhoods because they know what's good and what will sustain those neighborhoods.
Are there people who you think are listening?
Some. I put it that way, some. And that's why I try to reach out to some of the young caucus older people to try to say, you know, let's try to work together. It's not going to be a win-win on both sides. Let's come to negotiations. But don't just keep thinking because it's your way, it's the best way. And it's just like with your kids, you know, they say back in your day, it wasn't like that. Well, I'm sorry. It's the same thing. It's just a different time. And so I keep telling people, you don't have to create anything new. I said, it's a map out there. Just follow the map, and we can rebuild this city. But it's when people start throwing wrenches in it, and it kind of hurts us.
And what are the areas of commonality when you reach out to these younger, older people? What do you focus on in terms of how it would benefit their area of the city as well?
Well, what I had to first understand was, in their mind, I'm the old lady.
But you also have a lot of experience and understanding that they don't.
And I have to make them understand is I've walked those lines, and so I'm not telling them what to do. I'm just telling them to look at another way of doing it, just like they're telling me to look at another way. And I listen to them because I think they feel that older people don't listen to them, and they have better ideas, and that's fine. And so that's what I'm trying to show them now. It's okay to view your opinion and have ideas, but let's try to see how it's going to work holistically for both sides. And that's what I'm trying to do.
And is there an example that you can think of where in a conversation, either you or the other younger older person you were talking to actually did change their mind on something?
Like the minority bill. And so
this is a minority, the MWBE bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we started working together on that, and now we're working together on it. And they're coming up with recommendations that they want to see, and I'm working, coming up with recommendations. And so now we're coming together on a regular basis, and some things we I'm like, I don't agree with, and they accept that, and vice versa on my end. And so all I try to tell them is, whatever we decide, let's decide it unified. If we're going to agree on this, then that's what we're going to agree. I said, if you don't want to vote on it, it's okay. I'm fine. But your opinion is powerful. And I just think they felt their opinion wasn't respected. And that's what I'm trying to do, to show them I respect your opinion. But I am telling you, you have to be neutral and look at things on both ends. So with that minority bill, that's what we're doing.
Politically Speaking is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. 13th Ward Alderwoman Pam Boyd, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Until next time, so long.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.